There's a culture war going on in this country. We can no longer remain silent on the issues that affect us all. Decisions we make now will determine our future. But how do we engage with the culture in a way that honors Jesus? How do we rise above the noise to know what is right and what is true? It's time to bring God back into the conversation. It's time to reconnect. Here's Carmen.
Welcome, friends. I'm Carmen LaBurge. This is The Reconnect. We're here to speak the truth on the real issues of the day in real time. So how do we do that? How do we get God back into the conversations of the day? How do we enter into those conversations as the ambassadors of Jesus Christ and speak the mind of Christ on the matters of the day? How do we sort of get our own opinion out of it? How do we stop giving people just a piece of our mind and actually start giving them the very piece of the mind of Christ? Well, we got all kinds of ideas about how to do that. First of all, you got to cultivate the mind of Christ in the matters of the day, which means you need to be intentionally tending to your own discipleship. And so I want to encourage you to be talking with the Lord more than you're talking with other people. Be in the Word of God more than you are just, you know, blathering on words. So there you go. That'll be my first headline encouragement of the day. Hey, we got all kinds of resources posted for you at reconnectwithcarmen.com. While you're there, you can sign up for our email newsletter. I actually think today you can download a free chapter of the new book, Speak the Truth, which releases on the 25th of September. I'm pretty sure there's a free chapter posted at reconnectwithcarmen.com. If you want to go there today, pre-order the book, get your free chapter. There you go. Hey, you can also like us on Facebook. Let us know what you're thinking about on Twitter. I am at Carmen LaBurge. Actually, just so that you know, like around the clock on Twitter, that's actually where I am posting the stories that I am reading over the course of the day and even into the evening, and basically giving you my one-off thought about that, or some hopefully some thought-provoking notion. So like today, trending on Twitter is the whole, you know, release of the Apple iPhone X, the 10, right? So here is my comment and commentary. It's only one sentence. You don't need a $1,000 phone. I mean, there's just absolutely no way you need a $1,000 phone. If you have $1,000 today, you need to be sending that to the Red Cross, Samaritan's Purse, or Send Relief. All right. If you got $1,000 laying around that you can do something with today, don't spend it on a phone. Actually spend it helping your neighbors recover from either Hurricane Harvey or Hurricane Irma. So let's give our attention now to what's going on. What's going on not only in Florida, particularly in the Florida Keys, but now all the way up into Georgia and South Carolina. So we now know that there are 15 million people just in the state of Florida who are without power. The folks on the West Coast have been told their power should be restored by the end of the weekend. Now, let's note for a moment, it's Tuesday. So the folks on the East Coast of Florida, you can expect your power to be restored by the weekend. However, those of you on the West Coast of Florida, some 7 million people, your power is not likely to be restored until something like the 22nd of the month. Just to keep in mind, again, today is the 12th. And so customers on the West Coast of Florida, where Hurricane Irma made its final landfall, are likely to not have their power restored until the 20th, 21st, or 22nd of September. So something like 10 days from now. Our hearts go out to those who are just now getting a first glimpse, many of them not getting a first glimpse with their own eyes, but a first glimpse because there are at least folks able to get into the northern part of the Florida Keys. 25% of the houses are described as destroyed, devastating loss on the entire chain of islands. 25% of the houses in the Florida Keys are considered destroyed, and another 65% have suffered what is described by FEMA as major damage. It's still not clear how many casualties Irma caused in the Keys. There was a mandatory evacuation, which was not heeded by at least some people. Transportation officials are actually trying to figure out whether or not the bridges between the islands can withstand any weight so that they can actually send people in to, well, I would say go door to door, but in some cases there is no door to door to go to. So let's be very prayerful about the situation in not only the Florida Keys, but in other places further south in the Caribbean and Cuba, devastated, utterly devastated by Hurricane Irma. So I want to point one thing out about this loss of power, right? We have become so dependent in our culture on electricity. I mean, our ability for you to even be hearing me right now, whether or not you're listening to me live on the radio, whether or not you're listening via podcast or streaming audio or via podcast later, all of that's dependent on electricity. Refrigeration is dependent, requires electricity. I mean, just on and on and on. There's a cascading issue related to the loss of electrical power. It demonstrates our vulnerabilities. It demonstrates how utterly dependent we have become on something that, you know, is frankly, it's a part of God's goodness in terms of technology, but it's not a part of original creation. So, I just want you to think for a moment, you know, what it would be like to live without power for an hour. What would it be like to live without power for a day? What would it be like to live without electrical power for a week? How about a month? You think you could go a month? I don't think you could go a month. Today's the 12th. Some of our neighbors to the south in Florida are going to be going without power for at least the next 10 days. Possibly longer. So we just certainly want to be praying for them. It's actually really hard to imagine. You're probably shaking your head right now trying to imagine what that's going to be like, particularly in a place that is above 90 degrees right now, oppressive heat, high humidity, no refrigeration, and no air conditioning. I tell you what, I got a colleague sitting in front of me right now. He would not be able to withstand that. I just got to tell you. Okay, so it's not just the 15 million people in Florida who are without power. There's 1.3 million customers in Georgia, 161,000 in South Carolina, 62,000 in North Carolina, 20,000 in Alabama, all of whom are currently without power. So lots of the southeastern United States impacted by this storm. I got a colleague in Atlanta who's got family in both South Carolina and in Tampa, Florida, and she was very concerned about her mom and her stepdad and her grandmother in Tampa, and so we were ardently praying for them. We should have been ardently praying for her dad, who lives on Pawleys Island, South Carolina, because that's actually ended up taking a much more significant impact and hit. And then her house in Atlanta took a tree through the roof. So there you go. Sometimes our prayers are focused in places where folks are actually more safe than we know. So let's just be let's do some blanket prayers, just recognizing God's sovereignty over all things. And then let's also be praying for those people out there who have been described as acting like animals. So that's the way the looters have been described in some places, that people are behaving like animals. In another circumstance, though, I want to lift up to you one person who's been described as behaving like an angel. So Kristen Bell plays the role of, she's the Frozen star. So she plays in Frozen. And so she was stuck in Orlando, right? And so she did good. She did all the good she could with all the access that she had to all the means that she had available to her. And so if you just want to check out online what she's been up to, but she's been described, I'm just going to read you the quote, by another star out there in the world of stardom. His name's Josh Gad. His family was stranded in Florida. And he said this about Kristen Bell on Twitter. He said, "She literally saved my parents, my brothers, my entire family from Hurricane Irma. You are an angel and I adore you." He went on to say again, "You are truly an angel sent from above." So we got in one story people who are described as behaving like animals. In another story, we have at least one individual described as an angel sent from above. Let us be very clear as Christians that human beings are neither animals nor angels. We are actually we have a distinct status in creation as human beings. Human beings are distinctly and intentionally created by God in his image. We are not animals, nor are we angels. We did not evolve from animals, nor are we going to evolve eventually upward or ascend into some sort of angelic state. We are human beings created in the image of God. There's a reason for that. It's in order that we might not only know God, but be in relationship with him in ways that neither animals nor angels can. So I want you to be mindful of that when you hear people referring to others referring to human beings as either animals or as angels. That's your opportunity as a Christian to actually bear out the worldview that is biblical, the biblical worldview that human beings are actually distinctly and intentionally created in the image of God, and that we have a unique relationship to God as people who can know Him and be in relationship with Him. All right, friends, we're actually honored to be joined today by one of our Reconnect partners. We have worked closely with the Philos Project since the inception of this ministry, and we want to lift up their efforts here and around the world. And so today we're joined by Jesse Rojo. He is a Philos Project's, he's in charge of the Philos Project's Hispanic outreach, Hispanic affairs. He pioneered the bilingual programs to engage and educate Christian Hispanic folks in related to issues that I would consider in relationship to Israel and the people of Israel. So he founded Israel Acapella, an initiative to allow Hispanic Christians to connect with the land of Israel through the experiences and testimony of Christian music. He's part of Tim Keller's International Church Planning Network at Redeemer City to City. You can check it all out at philosproject.org, and you can follow Jesse on Twitter at JSS Rojo. That's R-O-J-O. Jesse, welcome to the Reconnect.
Thank you, Carmen. I'm very happy to be here, and I have to say I am impressed that you actually pronounced my last name correctly. Most people say Rojo.
Well, so I'm learning. I can't actually say that I don't butcher other people's names on the air, but Jesse Rojo is easy for me because I grew up in Tampa, and so all right, let's talk about this research that you all at the Philos Project have recently completed in relationship to the attitudes of Hispanics toward Israel. So let's just start the conversation with, you know, why is it important to sort of segment out these conversations? I know that sometimes we'll talk about, you know, how evangelicals view Israel, or we'll talk about how other segments of the population view Israel. Why was it important for you to segment out this conversation about Hispanics?
Yeah, well, I think it's important to point out that one of the main reasons is because this segment just wasn't there. It was non-existent. So when we were sitting down in our office just wondering, you know, where is the current Hispanic demographic is with relation to Israel, you know, we had some of the information, and the survey thankfully showed us that some of the information that we had and knowledge that we've obtained were accurate. But up until that point, there were just mostly assumptions and accumulations of other information that we were just able to get throughout random researches. So there was nothing there that specifically covered this subject with relations to how Hispanics think. So we thought it was very important for us to do it, especially an organization that considers the Hispanic demographic a very important demographic that will play a significant role. You know, obviously it already does, but in society, but it would only increase more as the time goes. So we just wanted to really figure this out and learn where, you know, wanted to see numbers that actually reflect that reality.
So I'll show my I'll either show my ignorance or my bias here, but it's my perception that Hispanic Americans are more religious than non-Hispanic Americans. I could be wrong about that, and I would also my perception would be they tend to either be evangelical Christians or Roman Catholic Christians. Am I right? Am I wrong? And then depending on which group they fall into, how do they view Israel?
Yeah. Well, you're right. Between Catholicism versus Protestantism, obviously more Hispanics are Catholic than they are Protestant. I think the survey was around 66% Catholic, and 34% came out Protestant. And the responses, they weren't significantly different. Honestly, it was more when it came to the question of influence. What was their what were some of the main influential factors in the way they viewed Israel? All around, the perception was generally very positive. But when it came to what are those influential factors, then you know, because you know, and I say this with much respect because I know there's a lot of faithful Catholics and a lot of very committed Catholics in the Hispanic demographic. You know, the majority of Catholics in the Hispanic demographic, they mostly attend church in mass once in a while, or, you know, when they're doing a baptism, and mostly they go to on important events. So and when it came to how they viewed Israel, then church was less of an influential factor than the media, for example. But for evangelicals, it was almost the opposite.
Oh, that's interesting. All right, tell us from your viewpoint, what are some of the most important things that the survey revealed? And let me just remind people, we're talking to Jesse Rojo. He is the Philos Project's Hispanic Affairs Director. So you can check it out at philosproject.org. And if you are interested in continuing the conversation directly with Jesse, you can do so on Twitter at JSSRojo. That's R-O-J-O. So what do you feel like, Jesse, were some of the most important things the survey revealed?
Well, one thing that was very interesting for me is that, you know, 45% of all of the Hispanics that were surveyed came out with a very positive view.
Oh, we lost Jesse. Hey, sorry about that. All right. Well, we'll get Jesse back here in just a minute. So let me just jump back into my own conversation here about this study. So what we're looking at are Hispanic attitudes toward Israel. And we talk about Israel, we're talking about a geography, we're talking about a nation state, we're also talking about a perception of a people group. And so I think that when we talk about Jewish-Christian relations, and we talk about our perception as American Christians of Israel and of the Jewish people of our day, we're talking about a whole range of issues and concerns. And so You have heard us have some of these conversations in the past here on The Reconnect, and a lot of those conversations are certainly influenced by our ministry partners at the Philos Project. And so the Philos Project undertook a national study on what are the perceptions and perspectives of Hispanic Christians in the United States, so U.S. Christian Hispanics. What's their view of Israel? Do they support Israel? What does that look like and what does that mean? And for those who are unsure about, let's say, whether or not America should be sending aid to Israel, or whether or not there should be sort of open support for the legitimacy of a Jewish state. When they don't know the answers to those questions, where are they turning for information? And so what are the influencers, what are the drivers in the conversation in terms of Hispanic Christians and their perception of Israel? And then also of Jewish Americans. I actually thought that one of the interesting things that came out of this survey was the perception of Hispanic Americans related to the influence that Jewish Americans have in American society. So actually 41%, again, this is according to the Philos Project survey here, 41% of Hispanics agree that Jewish Americans actually have too much influence in American society. Now just think about that for just a moment. Certainly, Hispanic Christians outnumber Jews in this country pretty significantly, but they're not feeling, this is a perception, right? This is how do you feel about your influence and how do you feel about the influence of others? And if you know that there is a significant difference in terms of the percentage of the population that falls into one group than the other, and the minority group in this case, the minority group in terms of how it feels about itself and its influence in the culture is Hispanic Christians. So they're feeling as if the influence of Jewish Americans, which just in sort of gross numbers of the population is certainly smaller than the gross numbers of Hispanic Christians in America, but the perception of power and influence is different. So I don't know if I was surprised by that. I actually found that to be a very interesting just a very interesting finding of this particular survey. 66% of Hispanics say that they sympathize equally with Israelis and Palestinians. And so when you think about Israel, you think about the legitimacy of Israel, you think about the issues that Israel faces as a nation, certainly the challenge of the Palestinians, the folks who who inhabit Gaza and the West Bank, and who are living at enmity with their Jewish neighbors. That might be the best way of describing this. The perception of Hispanic Christians here in the United States is that they sympathize equally with Israelis and Palestinians. And so that is an interesting finding as well. But in terms of where they're getting their information and a sense of the bias of that information, 44% of Hispanics surveyed were actually not sure if the U.S. media is biased or whether or not they're objective toward Israel. So you could just ask yourself that question here for a moment. When I am reading or watching something that the media is providing me in terms of information and coverage related to Israel, do I have a perception that that information, that that media is either biased or objective toward Israel? So Jesse's back with us now, Jesse Rojo from the Philos Project. He's the Hispanic Affairs Director. Hey, Jesse, welcome back. We've just been covering some of the top line findings of the survey. So let's just jump back into the conversation. I was talking about the perception of the media in terms of being either a biased or objective source where Hispanic Americans are turning for information. So maybe we could just jump into the conversation there.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. A lot of them came out unsure whether or not, you know, they were objective. I guess you covered that part. And one of the things that come to me as to some of the reasons why is just because the media, specifically, just doesn't, Spanish media just doesn't cover enough with regards to Israel. And there's obvious reasons why. I mean, Israel's not at the top of the list of priorities. They have a lot more issues that they have to worry about, you know, financial, economics, immigration, and education, et cetera. So Israel is not going to be one of the most talked about subjects when it comes to Spanish-speaking media.
Well, Jesse, what issues are Hispanic Christians concerned about when it comes to the Middle East?
Well, one of the most strong responses that we saw in the survey is when we asked them whether or not they're concerned about Christians, persecuted Christians in the Middle East, and it was over 70% of them that strongly agreed with that statement, that they are concerned for the safety of Christians living in the Middle East, specifically living within the Palestinian territories. So for us, we were a little bit surprised at that fact, that if there's any other question that they were asked, that was one of the most secured answers that they provided. So it also gives a little insight that it's not that they're completely, it's not that they completely are ignorant of what's going on in the Middle East. I think it's just, you know, the media that they're mostly surrounded by, they mostly focus on particular subjects, and it's not necessarily Israel.
Well, we appreciate that you at the Philos Project are a pioneer in bilingual programs to engage and educate the Christian Hispanic community on Israel-related issues. And folks can engage with you at philosproject.org. Jesse, thank you so much for being with us today on The Reconnect.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. All right, friends, we got to take a little break here. Just to remind you, The Reconnect is a listener-supported ministry by people just like you and by partners like the Philos Project. We'd appreciate it if you took a minute and visited us at reconnectwithcarmen.com. While you're there, you can sign up for the email list. While you're there, you can pre-order a copy of the book, Speak the Truth. It's going to help you reconnect the eternal with the everyday and get God back into every conversation. In addition, I think today you can go there and you can download a free chapter. So, hey, this is The Reconnect. I'm Carmen. This is The Reconnect with Carmen. We'll be right back.
Oh, friends. I'm Carmen LaBurge, and this is The Reconnect, where we're putting God in his place, back where he belongs, right in the middle of every conversation. So we're talking about what people are talking about. We're equipping you to be an ambassador of the kingdom of God in the midst of the kingdoms of this world. So we invite you to connect with us online at reconnectwithcarmen.com. You can like us on Facebook. You can always let me know what you're thinking about. I'm on Twitter, at Carmen LaBurge. Hey, while you're at the website, sign up for our email list. You will receive timely equipping resources designed to help you reconnect the eternal with the everyday and bring God back into conversations in ways that honor Jesus. So again, the website is reconnectwithcarmen.com. All right, I'm excited to have back with us today Trilia Newbell. Trilia is the Director of Community Outreach for the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission of the Southern Baptist Church. She's also an author and a speaker and a wife and a mom. Her writings can be found in Relevant Magazine, Desiring God, Christianity Today, the Gospel Coalition, lots of other places. Her latest book is a children's book. It's so great. It's called God's Very Good Idea. You can check it out at TriliaNewbell.com. You can also follow her on Twitter at Trilia Newbell. Trilia, welcome back to The Reconnect.
Thank you for having me.
So, okay, just let us, right off the top, what was the inspiration for the latest book?
Well, it's interesting. The inspiration really was just teaching my kids and teaching other kids about God's very good idea to create people of all different ethnicities, worshiping him and loving each other. And so I had the opportunity to teach a Sunday school class, and that I realized as I was researching for this Sunday school class, there is absolutely nothing or minimal from a Christian perspective about the Imago Dei, the image of God, and about our relationship to one another for kids. I couldn't believe it. So by the grace of God, a publisher was excited about the idea, but that is it. Teaching my own kids and teaching some of my students in my church.
So I love that. So I'm going to read a few of the opening pages to our audience so they can get a flavor of it. It says, in the beginning, in fact, before the beginning, God had a very good idea. It was a even better idea than solar panels or the super soaker or chocolate chip cookies or color TV, fireworks or the life raft, the roller skate or the x-ray machine, all of which you have very noted in time and date, which I appreciate. Then she goes on to say, and again, folks, this is God's very good idea. God's idea was to make people, lots of different people, who would all enjoy loving him and all enjoy loving each other. They would all be made in his image. They would all be like mirrors reflecting what God is like. Because God is full of love, they would be full of love too. So God got to work. He made a beautiful world for people to live in. Then he made the first people, a man and a woman, and he said to them, be happy. Enjoy loving me and loving each other. Have a huge family that will fill the earth and look after the earth and enjoy the earth. And then you go on, and there's these brightly colored, wonderful pages, and people are enjoying one another's company, and they're so wonderful and so happy. And then we have this dramatic turn of the page when God's very good idea is ruined by sin. Now, I have a testimony to share with you. A colleague of mine has a young child who read this book, and at the turn from page 12 to 13, which folks will see, there's a dramatic shift from beauty and goodness and joy and light to ugliness and anger and hateful darkness. And she had a visceral reaction in response to the turning of that page, that God's very good idea was ruined by sin. Talk with us about the truth that this book isn't just a happy creation story. You actually walk us through the reality of sin and brokenness and the gospel.
Yeah. Well, hearing you read it and replay it it actually had a response in my own heart, because it is the reality. The reality is that we live in a fallen and broken world, and we want kids to realize, to know the truth, so full truth, not just this happy-go-lucky story, but the truth is that we have broken relationships with one another because of sin. And we do not love people who are different than we are because of sin. And so the hope was is that we would, that I would, excuse me, that they, as they're reading it, would understand that God had, in the beginning, everything was perfect. And then sin came into the world and ruined that perfect. But Jesus came to rescue it, and he will return and make it new. And so I think we make two mistakes. I think we make a mistake if we're only talking about our differences, race, ethnicity, in terms of our disagreements. If we never celebrate it, that's a mistake. And we've done a lot of that. I also think it would be a mistake if we don't face reality. If we don't face the reality of our sin and brokenness and our need for the gospel that unites us. And so I wanted to tell the truth, to tell these are the name of the book, the series is stories, I think, that tell the truth. Or and I wanted to make sure that as I'm explaining this beautiful creation, that they understand that it truly is broken, so that they're not surprised by, oh, wait a minute. But then we have Jesus who rescues our broken world and who will return, as I mentioned earlier.
Well, that's beautiful. You actually just provoked me to turn to the back of the book, where I do see it says that this is a book in a series, Tales That Tell the Truth.
Yes.
At the Good Book for Children. So thegoodbook.com, if folks want to check out the whole series. It definitely felt to me, Trillia, as I was reading this, and again, folks, we're talking with Trillia Newbell about her latest book, which is a children's book, God's Very Good Idea. You can check it out at TrilliaNewbell.com. You can also find it at thegoodbook.com. Trillia, one of the things that I think struck me as I was reading it, is that there's a lot of rejoicing. There's a visual... people are visually rejoicing in one another's presence in this book. So talk with us about how we can rejoice in the differences of God's people. And again, this is not just about skin pigmentation. I love
right.
the representations in the book of people of various ages, obviously men and women, boys and girls, and there are also people of differing physical abilities.
Right.
I was really touched, I mean, as a person who has a child with special needs, I was really touched by the representation throughout this book of, you know, of children who, you know, in one case is in a wheelchair or in another case
yeah.
has braces on her legs. I was really touched by the inclusion of people who are differently abled. So talk with us about the joy and rejoicing and the differences of people.
Yeah, I just think we have so much that we can enjoy about one another, and so many of our differences in thought, in what we like, obviously our ethnicity, how God has made us, and so often these are the very things that divide us. And so what we wanted to depict, which you see in the pictures and the words when they get bigger, and is are people that we can rejoice, that we can learn, that we can enjoy one another, that we can love one another by the power of this Holy Spirit. So So the reason that it's important, I really want to rescue this topic, race in particular, ethnicity, and also people of varying abilities from politics. I want to, it's good. Yeah, I want to rescue it a bit because it's become so political. We don't know how to enjoy and rejoice and delight in one another, though God says in his word that he sings over us. In Zephaniah, right, he's delighting and he's singing over us. But yet we are so caught up in our fear and confusion and doubt and judgment that we don't take steps to ask questions, to learn about other people. And so this is about how we can enjoy, delight, and love one another by the power of the Holy Spirit. So that's why you see those pictures, and we want to capture it because it's not just the hope of the gospel. It's what the gospel it's what it does. It unites people who would not be united otherwise. It's remarkable. So we want to capture that picture of what the gospel accomplishes and what Jesus accomplished on that cross. That Ephesians 2 reality that we're not living out, but it's a reality.
So that Ephesians 2 reality, which I believe is depicted on, on the couple of pages before the last page of the book. And so let me read you what it says on this page, and then I'm going to describe for folks the illustration. And then I'm going to ask you to address the fact that most churches today, most actual gatherings of Christians don't look like this, and we're going to talk about that. So the page says, God's family is called the church. Your church friends are your brothers and sisters, your wonderful and colorful church family. You can enjoy loving them and loving God with them. This is God's very good idea. Lots of different people enjoying loving him and loving each other. God made it. People ruined it. He rescued it. He will finish it. Talk with me about the, still most segregated hour of the week in terms of the reality in which we live, and cast a vision for the change that you hope to see as the church lives into her calling of this big, very diverse family around this table, genuinely rejoicing in fellowship with one another before the Lord.
Sure. Well, the reality is it's going to take a lot of work, and we are at a spot right now where we're facing things that we can't ignore. We can't ignore racism. We can't ignore divide. We can't ignore white supremacy. It's in our faces now. And so I think the church in particular, this is our moment. This is our moment to really shine, to really break down those barriers that I was saying about the Ephesians 2 reality, just in case someone listening doesn't know exactly what I'm talking about. But Jesus tore the veil of hostility and is broken down in his body. We are one new man. And that reality is just not often lived out. We don't see churches, as you've already mentioned, worshiping together in a diverse congregation. We are still very much segregated. But I know of movement in churches and church plants that are working towards planting multi-ethnic churches, towards speaking out more about this. And I think that's where it begins. Proximity, people who are getting to know one another, people who are planting churches that are ethnically diverse. And that's why I wrote this book. If we sit down at our dinner tables and at the very least start building this foundation, what does it look like to talk about these things and start implanting seeds in little hearts? Maybe the next generation will say a different thing. They will have a different song, and that's my prayer. That is my hope, that the next generation will not, they'll think, why were they so caught up in this? Because we are diverse. That it wouldn't be something that we have to continually talk about. So that's my hope. My hope is that God would use this little bitty resource to affect a whole generation of people, so that this becomes a part of the DNA of the church, which it is not, but we have work to do, and I'm honored and really glad to be a part of that work.
Well, we love it. The book is beautiful. The message is certainly not only true to Scripture, but very, very timely. Friends, the author is Trillian Newbell. The book is God's Very Good Idea, a true story about God's delightfully different family. You can check it out at TrilliaNewbell.com. You can also find it at TheGoodBook.com. Trillia, thank you for the book. Thank you for your friendship. Thank you for your collegiality. And thank you for being a person who continues to invite us into the joyful conversation about God's very big and very delightfully different family.
Hey, thank you so much, Carmen. It's the you're a blessing and just a great friend. I'm really grateful.
Well, that's mutual. Thank you, my friend. Have a blessed day. All right, friends, it's time for us to go below the fold. This is the time in the show where we lift up stories and make connections that are designed to help you start or engage in conversations that may not on the surface appear to be about Jesus or God, but where the introduction of eternal principles is going to help you not only influence the conversation, maybe reframe the conversation, but gives you the opportunity to actually influence the way another person is thinking about something. So that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to get people to think about what they're thinking about. We got to start with ourselves. So let's think about what we're thinking about. Let's be sure we're thinking about it from a distinctively Christian worldview. Let's be sure we're applying the mind of Christ to the matters of the day. And then let's get in there. Let's get into the conversation of the day and speak the truth on the real issues of the day in real time. So what I have for you today, because you know I like to read international headlines, I like to see what's going on in other places. So this caught my eye. The Indian government, that would be the government of the nation of India, the Indian government has lodged an official diplomatic protest against an Australian company because of an offensive advertisement. So let me just tell you what happens in the offensive ad. First of all, it's an advertisement that is meant to promote inclusivity. So let's just start there. Let's just start with the goal was good. The goal was good. But here is how they then carried out their goal. Well, so the goal was good. They wanted to get everybody sitting down around a table eating lamb. All right, that was the goal. Well, the characters that they chose to feature around the table were Jesus, Buddha, the founder of Scientology, L. Ron Hubbard, the Greek goddess Aphrodite, and then Ganesha, who is a Hindu goddess who, by the way, is not an eater of meat, all right? She's a vegan, all right? But she is depicted digging right in, despite being considered a vegetarian by followers of the Hindu religion. So, in a statement, the Indian High Commission has said the ad was offensive, and it hurt religious sentiments in the Indian community. The offense goes on and on, and as you can imagine, it's whipped up into a frenzy. So, now, I think that we can understand that whoever made the ad did not mean to offend anyone, right? So we can accept that the premise of the ad was to show people of different beliefs. Actually, this is what they're saying of themselves. Will you accept the premise that the ad was to show people of different beliefs coming together at the same table and having a meal? All right, if that's your concept of what you're trying to do, then you might want to consider having people of those different faiths actually participate in a conversation about whether or not this would be okay, whether or not it would be in food lingo, kosher, whether or not this would be kosher. Okay, so I think that we can imagine that if let's say Muhammad had been pictured, well, first of all, there'd be outrage about that because they will have none of, Muslims will have none of that. So apparently it's not offensive to any of these religions that they have their main character, their featured person or personality depicted in an advertisement. Obviously, you're not going to put Muhammad in there because that in and of itself is an offense to Muslims. But if it had been Muhammad, he could have eaten lamb, but he couldn't have eaten pork. And so here again, you know, I think that the challenge is knowing enough about each and every one of these religions so as not to offend anyone in an attempt to make some inclusive statement. So we should be prepared to talk about meat offered to idols. We should be prepared to talk about that God declares all food to be clean. We should be prepared to talk about the experience that Peter has in the dream where the sheet comes down and he sees all kinds of different foods in it, and God declares them all clean, and he says, take and eat. You and I should be prepared to know why it is that the food laws in the Old Testament do not apply to Christians. And if you say to yourself, I have no idea why the food laws of the Old Testament don't apply to Christians, then you need to read the New Testament, specifically the book of Acts, specifically the experience of Peter, who it is declared unto him that all food is clean. You also need to read Paul's admonitions related to the eating of food offered to idols. Is there anything actually wrong with the meat? No, but it's about creating a stumbling block for another person. If another person sees a Christian eating something that person recognizes food offered to an idol, and they don't know that idols aren't real, then I'm creating a stumbling block for that other person, and therefore I don't eat it. I don't partake of it. Okay, you're saying to yourself, wow, this is a lot of theological stuff related to what we eat. Yes, and you might remember a conversation that we had recently here on The Reconnect with the author of a book called Eats with Sinners. So when we're talking about who it is that we're sitting down at table with, I thought it was a really good observation that every meal Jesus ever ate, he ate with sinners, every single one. So when you and I forgo sitting down in table fellowship with people because they are of different faiths or because of some other barrier in our culture, I want you to consider for a moment that every meal Jesus ate, he ate with sinners. And if you and I are Christ in the world today, we should be willing to go and do likewise. My other thought related to this harkens back to a Walmart ad that I saw recently, and it was all these various and sundry people of all different walks of life and all different countries and all different religious obvious backgrounds in terms of the way that they were dressing and things like that, and they were each and every one bringing a chair. You've seen this ad? Everybody goes and gets his own chair. Why? Because ultimately we're going to sit down together at a common table. Would you just think about that for a moment? I want you to think about the concept of a common table, which is the same thing that this ad in Australia was trying to provoke the image of a common table, which would be the feast of the what? Well, it's notable, right, that they're eating lamb? What do you know about the feast of the lamb? What do you know about the wedding feast of the lamb? What do you know about a table that is set that's already set before us in heaven? What do you know about the possibility of people from every tribe and tongue sitting down together at fellowship at that meal? What do you know about the possibility of there being an empty chair there right now that's got your name on it, and a chair that's going to remain empty unless you share the good news of the gospel of Jesus Christ with a lost person today? Just think about all of the applications in conversation of something as crazy as an Australian ad company coming up with an advertisement for lamb that features religious figures, including Jesus, Buddha, L. Ron Hubbard, the founder of Scientology, the Greek goddess Aphrodite, and Ganesha, right, the Hindu goddess, who is a vegan, notably, and therefore this is offensive. Okay, so I want you to sort of wrap your mind around the goodness of the gospel that's proclaimed in the Walmart ad about everybody bringing their chair to a common table and sitting down with one another and enjoying table fellowship. It's the same image that we are given in the kingdom of heaven of what it looks like for each and every one of us to sit down at table together as brothers and sisters in Christ, which is, by the way, the very image on the last page of Trulia's book. So God's very good idea actually ends with God's very beautifully diverse family sitting down in table fellowship with one another, red, yellow, black, and white, young and old, people of all range of abilities, people who are clearly from different places around the world, and that's what the kingdom of heaven is going to be like. If you don't like diversity among humanity now, you're not going to like it in heaven. And so I think that part of our encouragement needs to be, it doesn't matter what headline we're reading, it doesn't matter what conversation we're engaged in, are we kingdom-focused? Are we kingdom-focused? All right, friends, this is The Reconnect. That is all I got time for today. Connect with me online at reconnectwithcarmen.com. Sign up for the podcast. Donate to the ministry. Share today's show with someone new. Have a great day, and God bless. We'll be right back.
The Reconnect is brought to you by the Presbyterian Lay Committee. To continue the conversation and become part of the Reconnect community, visit reconnectwithcarmen.com.